All right, so Amy Carmichael is our sketch here tonight. She was born in a small village in Ireland, Northern Ireland, in 1867. Her parents were staunch Presbyterians, had immigrated from Scotland to Ireland in order to escape the heavy hand of the Church of England. And so she was a bit of an immigrant. She was born in Ireland, but her family had immigrated, so she was displaced. And I think that's an interesting part of her story, which I think will come out. Ultimately, of course, she would find herself in Bangalore, India. And so what we're going to consider tonight is sort of how that happened. How does a young girl from Northern Ireland find herself in a major world city, living in the slums with a thousand little girls, right? What happened here? That's what we want to consider. Her father, David, was a miller. A miller. Now, I wonder if any of our kids would be able to identify or think through what a miller is. I'll be honest, I had to kind of stop and do a little searching on this one. But what do you think a miller would do? Any adults want to jump at it? Sure. Flour. I was thinking we have a big operation in Lowell here. Anybody know the name of that?
King
Milling. And they are grinding or milling flour. Right. So that's pretty important, isn't it? Making bread for people, that sort of thing. So this was her father's work, and he was not just a common laborer, but he actually owned a milling operation there in Northern Ireland. So she wasn't necessarily grew up in a wealthy family, but it was a very stable situation for her growing up. Her mother, Catherine, was busy raising Amy and her six younger siblings. So there were seven altogether in the family. She was the oldest. They were very conscientious parents who disciplined their children. Physical discipline, spanking, right? We'll just say it. They held high standards for their kids. I thought it was interesting, one of the commentaries, talked about how they were not allowed to lay down in the pew at church. Some of the kids were, but not the Carmichael kids. You know, they were to sit upright and strive to pay attention, right? So this was the kind of home that she grew up in. It was a vibrant faith, strong work ethic, and a love for reading. These were all things that were very much a part of her growing up experience. At the age of 14, she was sent off to a boarding school in England. So not a terribly long ways away, but at 14, interesting, I'm not sure the cultural backdrop, maybe that was again because of her station in life. Her parents had some means, and so they sent her off to develop her education at a place called Harrogate, a ladies' college in England. She would respond to the gospel during that next year, at the age of 15, so it was a formative time for her. And of course, she developed and received an excellent academic foundation for life. After her third year of boarding school, her father came to England to see her. He was going to take her to visit London, the big city, before returning to Ireland for the summer. But he would soon reveal the true purpose of his visit. His mills had become unprofitable, at least in that part of Northern Ireland. And so they were moving to Belfast. They were moving to the big city where he was going to continue milling a new operation there. But it did mean that they had to sort of buckle their, drawing their belt buckles a little bit, right? Isn't that the phrase? I mean, they had to tighten up a little bit. So she was not going back to boarding school that next year. She was disappointed about this, but this too ended up being a very profitable time for her and in her spiritual growth and her maturity. Her father would die 2 years later after making that move to Belfast. And though, again, her family was still stable financially, they weren't impoverished. It was here in Belfast that she encountered extreme poverty and sort of the dark side of humanity. It's here where God really began to stir her heart for troubled people, particularly troubled young girls. One day while she was shopping in the town, she writes this in her journal, she saw a little girl pressing her face against the window to see the sweets inside. And as she looked out, the girl was in a torn and dirty dress and was barefoot. She was what would come to be called a shawling. These were street kids. They didn't have the money for hats, so they draw up a shawl over their head to cover themselves. And for the first time, she's sort of encountering a whole different world there in the city of Belfast. And she said this as she reflected on it. Oh, here's a depiction of Amy Carmichael. She said this as she reflected on that. She went home, wrote in her journal that night, "When I grow up and money have, I know what I will do. I'll build a great big lovely place for little girls like you." So didn't know her future, right? Didn't know exactly what that was going to look like, but pretty prophetic words that she wrote that night that made an impression on her heart. And she began volunteering with the Belfast City Mission. She's still a teenager, 19, 20 years of age now at this point. She would go into the slums of Belfast and gather children for Bible stories. Soon started a Sunday morning class for these shawlies, these mill girls who were very poor. And this really grew and blossomed to where they needed a little space to meet, and ended up a little facility was structured for this ministry by one of the local churches. But Amy realized not only were these kids poor, but in many cases they were vulnerable to the streets. Right? They were easy prey for certain men who were various states is it bad scene, all right? So she's realizing what's going on with these girls, and that just fuels her compassion even more. She was 20 when Hudson Taylor came to town, to that very region of Northern Ireland, speaking at a local Bible conference, and he had taken the gospel, of course, into the heart of China. He's a little bit older now at this point. He had established the China Inland Mission. But he told that evening of the 865 million people who were unreached with the gospel. 50,000 a day that were slipping into eternity, right? Without Christ. And in those coming months, she would write to her mother. She said, "Darling mother, for a long time, as you know, the thought of those dying in the dark, 50,000 of them every day, while we at home live in the midst of blazing light, has been very present with me. And the longing to go to them and tell them of Jesus has been strong upon me. Everything seems to be saying, go. Every bit of pleasure or work which has come to me has had underlying it the thought of these people who have never, never heard of Jesus." So this was kind of a push for her. She's already engaged in ministry, but a push for her to think of maybe even bigger ministry aspirations in missions. And she seemed, on the surface, to be an unlikely candidate to be a missionary. She was quite sickly. She had a condition that was referred to as neuralgia, disease of the nerves that made her whole body weak and achy and often put her in bed for weeks. She was not well physically. As a matter of fact, she applied. She went to London and she applied to the China Inland Mission and was denied because of her health. But she was part of a very vibrant community there, Keswick Bible conference grounds and movement. They're kind of part of the Methodist movement. And they had clearly seen her ministry, her effectiveness. They had openly endorsed her. And so she felt confident to just keep looking for another place to serve. That didn't deter her or the church that she was a part of. She went to Japan initially, but realized pretty quickly, within a year, that the climate was not suitable for her health. A friend had written to her, telling her about the needs in Bangalore, India, and she just took that as an aspect of her call, a call from the Lord, an open door, and she would spend the next 55 years there in Bangalore, India, without furlough. I mean, that was it. She found the spot, the climate was right for her particular condition, and she just locked in on it. Our main focus, again, as we have said, would be girls and young women. And in the context there in India, this was often connected with the Hindu temples. And kids would be sold, oftentimes if their parents didn't have money or if there was some type of disability, they would be sold into the temples, and let's just say it was not a good scene. This is human trafficking, right? At the fullest degree. Now, if you want to get a good treatment of this, I think I included the Torchlighters has a series, and they have a great one on the Amy Carmichael story, and it actually chronicles this first little girl, Prina. She's the first one that escaped from the temple and showed up at Amy's door. And there's tremendous pressure from the priests to have her return, and she refused, and it was a big uproar. But that became the beginning. She began, her eyes were open to what was going on. And but this little animated snip there, it's about 30 minutes long, but it chronicles the story of Prina. And it would be a great one. And it's available to you on Right Now Media, right? For free. It's part of that subscription piece that the church has given access to. So if you need a password or something to get into it, let us know. But there's a great resource, a lot of them there in that Torchlighter series. Eric Little, some ones we're going to be considering here even later as well. But Carmichael founded the Donover Fellowship in 1901 to continue her work. This had become up to 1,000 children were being cared for. So that's why there needed to be a greater degree of organization. And that's where this Donover Fellowship came. And it really caught the attention of the world and even of Queen Mary, who helped fund a hospital in Donover as well. The ministry there, the Donover Fellowship, continues to this day, although under now national leadership, Indian leadership. I don't know all the specifics of it, but told there are about 500 girls and young women that live there to this day in a shelter environment there, an orphanage environment. One of the frustrations, just a couple of interesting things about her ministry. One of the frustrations that she experienced was what she perceived as a sense of laziness on the part of many of the British missionaries. And it's kind of an interesting historical perspective on this that I think explains some of this. This is a quick snapshot of the British Empire in the 19th century. Right? So, not just a little, right? It's not just Britain. What we think of as the UK, Scotland, England, Ireland, but they had massive influence around the world, right? And even in India, right? They controlled India. So what part of the problem was is there was sort of mixed motives going on here. I mean, these individuals that were there were missionaries, but they were also colonists. And they were also, I mean, they had economic interests. They had political interests. And this is one of the ways I think really Amy Carmichael's unique upbringing as Irish, but even not really Irish, Scottish, and she was a third culture kid, is what they refer to missionary kids or military kids, right? Home was a funny notion for her, and she never felt thoroughly British. And so she's seeing things in this British colonization and how the British treated and looked down on the Indians, sent them out to do their dirty work, and she said, "Well, this just doesn't seem right." And so she worked very hard to show respect to the Indians. She adopted their customs as much as possible, identified with them. She wore the sari, is that what it's called? Kind of the one piece that would wrap around a couple times and then up over the shoulder, and then any remnant would go over the head, right? I mean, she would dress like this. She would even use some, I don't remember what they said, if it was coffee or what it was that she used to kind of darken her face. She just wanted to make every effort to respect their traditions. And, of course, a very rigid caste system, and she was most concerned about those in that lowest class, you know, the untouchables. It's very real still in India today. Every time Ishak is here, we talk about the implications of the caste system for gospel ministry. And she just made every effort to sort of break down those barriers. And she really embraced a worldview of service. Again, coming from a relatively affluent family, I just find this challenging. She did not simply pursue her own comfort and ease. She understood that God had given her education and resources in order to serve others. And she had this almost a phobia that she didn't want to settle. She didn't want to get caught up in an easy life. This was another one of her poems that she wrote that reflects this sentiment. From prayer that asks that I may be sheltered from winds that beat on thee, from fearing when I should aspire, from faltering when I should climb higher, from silken self, O captain, free thy soldier who would follow thee. From subtle love of softening things, from easy choices, weakenings, not thus our spirits fortified, not this way went the crucified. From all that dims thy Calvary, O Lamb of God, deliver me. Give me the love that leads the way, the faith that nothing can dismay, the hope no disappointments tire, the passion that will burn like fire. Let me not sink to be a clod. Make me thy fuel, flame of God. Is that great? Heartfelt. Her passion, and she recognized maybe some tendencies from her background, and just said, "God, I don't want to settle." So there's a wonderful fervor and passion that marked her ministry. Got her in a little bit of trouble because she was a little bit confrontational on some of these things with some of the other missionaries, and made her views known, but felt very strongly about it. One of the other things that got her in trouble was her honesty and her realism. She refused to sugarcoat what was going on the mission field. Matter of fact, she, at one point, sent off some of her journals. One of the mission societies back in England had requested some material to go to publication, and so she sent it, and they sent it back, saying, could you clean it up a bit? Could you kind of put a few more success stories in here? You know, this is depressing, you know. For her, it was interesting. It wasn't just a matter of her conscience, like the need to tell the truth, but she also felt that holding back on these realities would ultimately be a disservice to the cause of global missions. So she wrote this. This is great. I love this. It is more important that you should know about the reverses, the negative stuff, right? More important that you should know about the reverses than about the successes of the war. We shall have all eternity to celebrate the victories. But we have only a few hours before sunset in which to win them. We are not winning them as we should, because the fact of the reverses is so little realized, and the needed reinforcements are not forthcoming as they would be if the position were thoroughly understood. So we have tried to tell you the truth, the uninteresting, unromantic truth. Isn't that great? I love that. How old is she? I don't know. This was from one of the, she wrote prolifically, and this was from one of her works entitled Things As They Are. But 1903, I guess that was the publication date. So that's great insight there. So as we've done, I'm going to close with a few lessons here, just to try to summarize a few take-homes. Number one, you never know who is in your circle of influence. This is a statue of Amy Carmichael as a young girl at her home church, or it's placed there in her home church in Northern Ireland. Bangor, County Down, Northern Ireland. And it made me think, looking at her as a young girl in that statue, how many people in that local church knew what Amy Carmichael was going to do with her life, the impact that she would have, right? And how could you, right? How do you think her Sunday school teachers felt? I mean, think about the impact of that little girl in your Sunday school class, right? Or your Ignite group. And man, the ripple effects just go on. It was Elizabeth Elliot who wrote one of the great biographies about Amy Carmichael, because that's what drove Elizabeth Elliot to missions. Think about the account of Jim and Elizabeth Elliot. Five of those missionaries, right? Martyred in Ecuador, spurring a wave of missions like the world had never seen. And you could trace some of that back to a little girl in a Sunday school class in Northern Ireland. You know? Never know who's in your circle of influence. We never know the impact of our ministry, right? Appreciate Matt's prayer in the day-to-day, right? The Monday through Friday. You just don't think often about the ripple effects of our actions. I mean, that's a great aspect of Carmichael's life. Here's a second lesson to think about. Singleness is a noble calling. I find myself in conversations about this with people quite often, people who don't want the gift of singleness. Right? Paul talks about the gift, a lot of discussion in 1 Corinthians 7 about what he actually means by that. And we talked a couple weeks ago about Fanny Crosby, how God brought her husband a little bit later in her life. Carmichael's unique in that she did have several opportunities to marry, but ultimately chose to remain single. She once cited a Tamil proverb, an Indian proverb, children tie the mother's feet. Right? Means that children keep mothers from doing what they want to do. And that's true, right? So, and she just very consciously knew that the types of ministry she felt like she was called to, it just wouldn't be compatible with a husband or with children. So she recognized a certain freedom, and that's certainly the spirit of what Paul was talking about there, that there is an opportunity in singleness to serve in a way that just isn't possible in marriage. But I do find a realism. She did struggle with it. She had a good friend. One particular instance, several times where this came up, but one of them that I wanted to relate to you. She had a good friend and missionary colleague whose nickname was Twin. I don't know what the background there was, but the missionaries were assigned seats at a missions conference, and Twin was seated alongside of another one of Amy's friends, and Amy was alone at her table. Or at least the only single. It didn't get into the details. And there was a little moment there of whether you call it jealousy or just loneliness that she felt. And she expressed it in her journals. She said, I longed, yes, longed to be glad, to be filled with such a wealth of unselfish love that I should be far gladder to see those two together than I should have been to have Twin to myself. While I was asking for it, it came. For the very first time, I felt a rush, a real joy in it. His joy, a thing one cannot pump up or imitate or force in any way. Half consciously, perhaps I had been saying, thou and Twin are enough for me. One so soon clings to the gift instead of only to the giver. And interesting, this twin was a gift from God. She was a great friend. But it struck her, God's the one who gave her to me. God's the one who gave me this friend. It's God that fills that void. He's the only one that can fill that void, right? But I think it does reveal that wasn't easy. There was a struggle accompanying that. And yet I do think it's important to say that it's a noble calling. In our culture sometimes, depending on what part of the country you're in, people can feel like they're not quite complete if they're single. Boy, Scripture has a lot to say about that. Particularly in Paul's writings. She did singleness well. Number three, get involved in serving. Get involved in serving. Long before starting an orphanage in India, she was gathering street children for Bible stories in her hometown of Belfast, right? And don't think that you will serve God later under different circumstances if you're not committed to serving God now. I just had somebody else in my office, and they're like, I don't know what my gifts are. We're kind of processing through this. And I said, well, here's a few options. Try it. Right? And you can take a spiritual gifts inventory, and you know that might be helpful, but the bigger thing is just try it. Just step out there. There's a nobility in just getting involved. And I think, again, Carmichael modeled that really well. Number four, there's more than one kind of children. Amy Carmichael never married. She would never be a wife or a mother. When she died, she requested that no stone be put over her grave in Donover. That's where she was buried, right there where she lived for the last 55 years of her life. But her children, all 1,000 of them, put this bird bath there in the graveyard, and it has just one word on it, Amma. Anybody want to guess what it means in Tamil? Mama. Isn't that powerful? I mean, here's a woman that in some ways was blessed even beyond what could have flowed out of a biological family. And there's promises. Jesus talked about this even too in the gospel accounts. Everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or a father or mother or children or lands for my name's sake will receive 100-fold and will inherit eternal life. More than one kind of children. And finally, God has given you everything you need for the assignment He has given you. God doesn't make mistakes. One of the stories about Amy Carmichael, and there's some dispute as to whether it's true, but she had brown eyes. Her siblings, almost all of them, had blue eyes. They were Irish, right? They're lighter skin, and she lamented her dark eyes. But guess what? It seems that those dark eyes served her pretty well in India. God didn't make mistakes, right? Later in life, 20 years before she died, she had a very serious fall and was largely disabled. But it was during that season that she did a tremendous amount of reading, of writing. She wrote over 30 volumes, and most of those were penned during that time of when she was incapacitated to some degree. Again, not God's mistake, and she learned to just respond to how God had the situation that God had placed her in, and didn't lament that or feel sorry for herself, but embraced it as part of God's calling for her at that particular season.